Welcome back. It's Braden Anderson.
Hi, I'm Braden. That's Kelly. This is episode 60 of the Sliding Podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll have some exciting new sponsors to talk about maybe next week. Maybe. We might put them in afterwards. I don't know. We got stuff in the works, fun stuff, exciting stuff. All right, let's get into it. I wanted to start. We put out a video on Instagram yesterday, which we're filming this on Tuesday the 13th, so we're a week ahead of when you're going to hear it. But we started demolition on the house next to the north slide.
Bam, boom.
It was cool.
Wow.
Super cool.
Nothing funner than that.
That's just the epitome of guy stuff. So oh watching a house be destroyed.
Half the people that wrote to me said that I sent a video to.
Yeah.
It's, I'd have flown out to see, you know, just,
yeah, yeah.
It's just so cool to demo with that giant excavator. I mean,
yeah, it's a cool video. I'll put it in here, but, Johnny kept saying he was hoping Rosie wasn't going to drive by because she hates seeing old houses get destroyed.
So do I.
Yeah. It was an old house. I lived in it for a while.
I mean, my contractor, Charlie. Yeah. I said, I don't know, man. I gotta move. I just love that old house, right? And he goes, you need to get over yourself. I go, it's just a cool old building.
So
to whom I don't. I mean, I just dig. Yeah, Rosie died, but
yeah,
yeah.
And then I spent
hand built stuff, man.
I spent some time. Yeah, it was an old house. I mean, I lived in
1951.
There for a while.
Our post lady. Just born in it. Pat was?
Yeah.
She was born in that house. She was the first one to stop by. And everything's done. All the shit's everywhere.
Yeah.
Everything's done. The dust is set. Everything's gone. The building's collapsed on itself inside the basement. And she pulls up and I go, oh God.
Oh, geez.
Oh God. Is this going to mean tears? And I'm like, oh shit. I hate this part. She's like all smiles. Oh, wow. That was cool. It looks so much bigger out here.
Yeah. No, it does. I'm really excited to see the final form. Obviously, it's going to be really neat. And what are we doing to the square footage? Is it doubling it?
No, way more than that.
Oh, more than that?
Yeah. It'll be close to 10,000, I think.
A lot of people have been in that north slide. It was already a huge fly shop, so it's going to be quite a spectacle.
Just the main entrance is bigger than
what it
is. Bigger than the whole shop.
So
just
it,
the entrance.
Is the part that's still standing just the right wing?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be neat. So Aaron on Facebook, I spend almost no time on Facebook, even though everything we post goes to Facebook. And I decided to look through some Facebook comments yesterday.
I'm back with Facebook because I did my thing where you guys told me to don't stare at the booby pictures or whatever.
Well and down
which I
women.
Didn't really. I just like trying to get to the fly. So I would stop and pause. I am kind of a geek with it just because I love to look at flies.
Yeah.
And so I would pause those flies, and it took 2 days, and now I'm just like, full on. And then some shit will show up, too.
So but just flies?
For the most, about every third thing. Yeah. I don't mind scrolling through them, and you know, but it's kind of, there's some really cool.
And
as I said, I dig fly tying spaces.
Right.
I'm on that one all the time.
And not well endowed.
Yeah, there's a place, time and place for everything. But
sorry to the guy.
Not while I'm looking for my Irish lock flies.
A man wrote me an email saying he's very disappointed in me talking about my stick figure drawings. And
a lot of people wrote about
whatever, man.
But at least it was well and
it's not like I do this all the time. I did it on one flight. Yeah. I mostly sent them to family members.
Yes.
And my family thinks that's funny. And I love
so the first thing I asked if you sent it to your mom.
I don't think I did. I did send it
no,
to my
you said
sister.
You didn't. You didn't.
Okay, but Aaron said, why didn't you sell the old building and move it instead of tearing it down? I don't understand the waste.
I agree with him because it was about four times as much to move it.
Yeah.
And it's a very small house. It's really old.
It's really old and small. And
it's built like a brick shit house, man.
I don't know who would want to pay to move that
house. I was trying to move it to give it to Shirley.
Were you?
Yeah. But it was a lot of cash
I imagine those things are harder when it's got a basement too, right?
No, nope, that makes it easier.
Really?
Yeah, because you can get underneath there because it's got a raised footings, so you could have got right underneath there and moved it. but then you got to have a lot to move it to, and then you got to do this. And I totally agree with the way I'm in there plucking out timbers out of the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, well, Luke was. But,
right.
But I totally agree. But sometimes you just can't. You got to have some place to put it. If you notice a lot of those things, like that one in Bozeman that was there for sale on Huffine forever, and they finally put $1 on it, and you had to move it.
Yeah. Right?
And they just moved it half a mile down the road and remodeled it. But that was a big house, and this was probably, I don't know, 1,200 square feet or something. It just wasn't practical.
It's creaky.
Hmm? Oh, I love creaky floors, man. I build them into my houses.
Yeah, I love
it. I like floors that squeak.
As a defense mechanism?
That's two.
Yeah. See, all it did for me was wake me up when my roommate happened to go pee 14 times a night.
Yeah, well, at least.
With a door open.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I that's a good point, but we were done in 2 hours. And it's probably half gone by now.
Yeah,
because we had today. Today they're cutting foundation, the old foundation out away from the one part of the building that we built.
I'd never seen like true building demo up close before. It was cool to film with a drone. It's made cancer soup in that basement.
It's
just, all the asbestos and everything. All the dust that was coming out of there.
That's just old stuff. It's just dust.
Yeah. But yeah, I was surprised.
We didn't somebody had wired. They didn't even have this. I bought two or three houses. This entire place had asbestos coated. All the Romex used to have this coating on the wire.
Yeah,
it was a fire retardant, right? And this entire building, there was none in that. That was all regular, just plastic coated Romex.
Mm-hmm.
You saw all the wire hanging out there. There was really nothing in that one.
No.
I don't know why, unless they redid it. Shit, there wasn't about five outlets in the whole friggin' house. It wasn't like they did it nowadays where you got to have one like every 8 feet or some shit.
That is like my pet peeve of, I guess, your assets, is that there's no outlets anywhere. This one has outlets. That I was trying to find somewhere to plug my computer yesterday in the north slide. There's one set of outlets behind the counter and that's it.
They go all the way around the room.
The entire place. No, none of them have holes. They're all like, I got them covered. What?
I got them covered because we'll never use them. They're all in there.
Oh. Yeah. Well, Brayden doesn't have them.
Huh?
I need access to them.
I just put.
Sorry, I got a lot of needs.
I put blank covers over them because they're just a pain in the. They're just there.
Yeah.
You have to have them. There's one every 8 feet in that building.
Yeah. I didn't know that was building code. Two, I see where they are.
It may be less than that. It may be one every six. It's ridiculous, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You would never, ever.
No, I mean, I see the flat plates there.
But every electrician will ever tell you when you say, I don't want these things. He goes, you will. But you won't want all of them, but you'll want that one over there that you didn't put in when you want it over there.
Yes.
And so you just do what you're told and you put the stupid little.
No, I spent exactly 6.5 minutes walking around that building yesterday trying to find somewhere I could
blank
charge
covers.
My laptop.
This one's got
a bunch.
It's got the same.
Yeah.
Okay. Code.
Well, that old house, I remember I was charging all my camera gear in a very easily stepped on place. But those are my problems. And
sorry that we built them. But if the next one, I'll
consult me on the.
That would be this. We did, just to make you feel better, I could have bulldozed this place. I have done 11 remodels on this store. It went from 419 square feet to just shy of 6,000. And we reused, rebuilt. There's still one little piece, that little piece over there in the original slide end that's OG. But we.
Which piece is that?
This roof line underneath the cash wrap.
Gotcha.
It's saggy, and it eats up some light, but
yeah, leaked a little bit a couple winters ago.
It's the only thing left in the entire place. It's OG.
Remember when we had all that snow on the roof the winter where I was working here? And right
three
there.
Years ago.
It was just leaking right through the middle.
It was actually leaking up high, and it's had about a 12-foot ice jam going up it.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting stuff.
Very
why don't we talk about fishing?
Yes.
All right, let me check my notes here and see what I had in store. Okay, this question
Zoom
comes
in.
To us
Zoom
from...
Zoom in, it's a new fly. Zoom in. Okay, you can't. Never mind.
This question comes from S. Reed Fuller on Instagram. He says, "Sup, Braden." I'm going to add you into this. Sup, Braden and Kelly. Had a question for the pod. If you think there's any merit here, I'd love to hear Kelly speak on how he identifies hatches while on the river. Is it just knowing which bugs come out at certain times of the year, or are you able to discern different species of mayflies just by watching them fly around? Do they have unique behaviors? I can tell the obvious difference between mayfly, caddis, stonefly, but the subcategories stump me unless I can snatch one out of the air or pick a spinner out of the water to get a closer look at it. This may be the method, and I may be answering my own question, but I thought Kelly might have some good or have some great insight on this.
What's your name? Al?
Who's Al? S. Reed Fuller. Let's go Reed.
Reed. Yeah, you can identify. I mean, I've been looking at bugs for 60 years, you know, and to a degree, part of it historical data. I mean, you know that there's only X number of bugs hatch at certain time frames, right? You've got, you know what caddis are going. You know if there's, obviously there's a massive difference between stoneflies and all the rest of them. But on your little ones like capneas and stuff, they can, you could be faked out, but the timing is always pretty indicative of what's there, right? So you're not going to see a tiny little stone in July like you would. You might see a yellow Sally. That one will get, you know, lots of people tell me they misdiagnose that one, right? See them, but mostly it's just knowing the time when they come out. They, you know, you got, and on this river, it can be a problem here. You can have potentially, I mean, it's possible you could have 13 bugs hatch on this river in the same day. If things all work out, that everything's laid on one and all of a sudden it gets hot on the other and these bugs start popping and, you know, the betas are late and there's still a bunch of midges and, you know, the betas and the PMDs start going at the same time because these are late and this one's early. And it's possible, but generally, you know, there's a color differentiation on a lot of them, especially midsummer. Like you're not going to be, you could say I saw a Sally and it was really a PMD because mm-hmm. you just saw something flying, right? And generally they'll have different, like trichos, doing this divey thing like this and caddis swarm and sort of tricho swarms that can fight and that can fool you. But mostly you just got to break it down. I would encourage anyone, I just absolutely think Western hatches is hatches. I don't know, it's probably hatches 3 now. I was just looking at hatches 2 the other night. But hatches is a little bit more the book I'm talking about is a little bit more specific to the east, I think, and the Western Hatches by who did that? Is it Hafley? No, it was Hughes. That I think is the greatest book ever. It's for learning this stuff. And they'll be in there. There'll be little things about how they fly, but basically that's just you. You've got to go out and say it's July, 10th, and you're going to have PMD's going to be here. You're going to have two different caddis. They're going to come at different times of the night, and you're going to just have to start looking at them. Like you said, if you can get close enough, see how you can identify a caddis from a mayfly. Because there, you're done. Yeah. Well, now you only got 3 mayflies that are hatching this week, theoretically. And so, and God help you if you get a little blend on lakes, like if all of a sudden you get a lake bugs coming down.
Yeah, right.
And then, like if you're up between the lakes where you only fish, you can have blends of lake bugs coming down on you, and like a Calabatus and an Ephron, they can look a lot alike. Mm-hmm. They can be very, even you can see them on the lake or, they can blend in. They can be, and not all bugs, geographically bugs, like the sulfur and the PMD are the same thing, right? Eastern and Western. But sulfurs are much more orange. And ours can be, our PMDs can be gray.
Yeah.
Barely have a tint of yellow to them. I've seen them sometimes, they almost look bluish. So, and that's just, That can be have to do with the water makeup too. So you can't really lock in on colors until you know your water.
Yeah, because on different rivers, the different bugs take on different colors. Like I just think back to the South Fork with Stenerson.
Yeah.
With the PMDs down there and, mm-hmm. and
Pink Alberts.
Pink. Yeah.
Yeah, they're it's different, but and they're pink.
Right.
Ish, right?
Yeah.
And I got my ass kicked because I would not put on a pink. Would not put it on. If I had tied it, I would have. I did put one on eventually.
Yeah.
I wish you would have floated a cup down to me.
You tried. Remember, that was the whole
River
pricing.
Yeah.
River pricing.
But identifying them on the wing, you know, it's like if you like to look at raptors, it's just time spent, right? It's like, there goes a red tail. Was it? It was a beauty. No, I'm sorry. That's not the same thing. They're different birds, right? But no matter how good you are, I mean, shit, my eyes. I hope you're not as old as I am because that gets a lot harder. I almost got to go, oh, gotcha. Yeah.
No, but I think that's a very legitimate technique, right? That's when I'm trying to...
Absolutely. No, you're always grabbing them.
Grabbing them, pick them off the water. Picking spinners off the water mm-hmm. is a great idea, especially, I mean, you might find out that they're locked on spinners. I mean...
And if you'll pay attention to the water, spinners, just to deviate on this, you know, one thing, you know, nobody... We're going to get to journaling here in a minute. This is something I can tell you, even though Ethan thinks he should carry his computer with him, the thing that I used to do as a kid is we'd seine the rivers. It was kind of gay, man. There's a lot of guys out there who are like freaking bug catchers in the air, and be like, dude, they're eating the shit out of it down here. There's guys up trying to catch bugs, man. It's like, whoa, dude, don't. I will never go drinking. But I would carry bug nets, or not, they weren't called bug, they were minnow nets. They were fur. Fur is it's a product of an animal. But if you're from the Midwest, instead of saying fur, you will say fur.
It's F-E-R instead of F-U-R or F-O-R.
You would go and get these little seine nets for aquariums. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many times I cracked a code, and or including on this river, when the, what bug was it that was hatching? It was spinnerfall. And there's just, I can't buy one. Probably Epeiurus, I don't know, but that's such a prolific bug here. But, and I'm saying, and I came up with a bajillion. I mean, I'm down there just kind of can't, because they're just really, the rise, that's another thing to tell you a lot about the rise forms, but the rise forms are very consistent to a spinner. The thing about a spinner eat, it's seldom will it be a hard eat. The flies are on the water. And the bugs, no. That's why I wrote the books, Cripples and Spinners, is that people put so much emphasis on duns. Well, duns can hatch over massive lengths. They can drift. Their drift can be a mile long easy. And just, if everything's not perfect, they don't swim to the top, they don't get out, you know, and so they just go with a spinner, and then they pop out, right? And they can pop, man, some of them will, it just depends on humidity and temperature and all that kind of shit, but some of them go pretty quick, some of them will struggle in that surface film for hundreds of yards. Well, the ones that pop out, that's why you see caddis tend to go poof, you know. They call them popcorn caddis, right? Mm-hmm. Pow, they can pop out and they're flying almost instantly, right? That's why whenever you see fish air launching on an emergence, you can almost guarantee, there's no always, you can almost guarantee it's a caddis eat because popcorn, they'll pop out of there so fast that the fish will race them, right? And they'll keep jumping. Well, a spinner fall, there's no race. The bugs are dead, right? Or they're at least gonna be. That's not true. Some of them, caddis in particular, have multi-broods. But it's a very distinct eat.
And this conveyor belt.
Right. And they're just, it's very deliberate. There's just very perfect cadence, right? And so that's what I've got going on. And what I went out and I seined, and it sat me several times in Michigan too, and I got a drift of caddis, and they're all like 22s, black caddis. And the... And so I pump a fish to finally get one and pump it. It's got like no spinners in it, but a million of these stupid little caddis in it, right? It's like pulling out a zooplankton goo out of a lake fish. It's like, put it in, it's like, holy shit. And they're all little tiny caddis, yeah. Right? So, which all you need to do is put a little dubbing on a 20 hook and your 22 hook, and you're fine. Right. There's nothing to it. They're just like a little tube, right? So that those things can really, that's why I like journaling. That's why I like, because you go out and you do these things and you discover stuff. I had no idea those things were here. This was 20 years ago. I had no idea those caddis were here. Mm-hmm. And I fish almost exclusively in the evening because of being in the shop, especially back then. So it's a real code cracker, but I mean, that's for you to go out and catching the bugs, the bugs are flying around you for almost all practical purposes are going to be your spinners in the evening, right? There's not much that's going to be, Ephrons could be hatching at night. I mean, hexes and stuff, but you're really not hexes so much. Hexes are spinner fall too. But for the most part, you'll know what's there, but you might catch in particular on freestones in this river in particular. This river is a caddis river. This river is caddis. And so get used to just, you know, quick saying stomach pumps. I know some people are afraid of stomach pumps. They tell you a lot of secrets, you know, they'll tell you what they're eating. But pretty much it's just, if you get a book, and again, if you're in the way, I don't know if there's an Eastern Hatches. I know there's Hatches, the book Hatches. And then there's Western Hatches. And they're both spectacular resources. Mm-hmm. And so, they will break it down. Every place, call fly shops, get the hatch charts, it'll tell you what's going to hatch when, within reason, right? There's a window there of 2 weeks that things can go right.
A lot of fly shops' websites have like kind of a basic outline of the different hatches you'll see throughout a year.
That's
a great resource. Yeah, call them.
Call a fly shop, and if they don't know what's hatching, hang up.
Call a different fly shop.
We make our when you get down to it, we make such a deal about these damn bugs. There's like 20 freaking bugs, and we're still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
There's 20 freaking bugs. Got a room temperature IQ. I had them figured out when I was 17. It's not that hard.
It's a finite amount of them. Yes.
If you've got four bugs in the spring, there's less. You know, always the same. Everywhere in the world, it's the same. Your spring's going to have very few bugs. You're going to have midges. You're going to have a few betas. You know, you maybe got a capnia stone hanging out around there. But for the most part, you're going to go through that, and it's going to hit the mother load's going to be in July around there, where your peak water temperatures before and after that, it can get pretty sparse. Other than caddis being around, it can get kind of sparse on you, right? Mm-hmm. So you only have to identify 3-4 bugs, maybe 5-6 on the next one, maybe 10 the next one, and then it's going to drop off to next to nothing. So it's not that complicated. And it really is the same all across the U.S. You know, it's not like we're any giant leaps. The hex hatch, that only one I've ever seen in Montana, coincided exactly with the Michigan's. And we were all drunk outside the Shiloh down in Idaho Falls. Bunch of reps and me had a show going on. And I look up at this, there's a walkway on the river. And this kid walks over and he goes, "Hey, aren't you from here? What's that thing?" "Freaking hex." I'm like, "Oh, holy shit, you got hexes out here?"
Oh, God.
They're right in town, right on the snake.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know anybody that fishes them, but it's pretty much the same. And so the only good answer I can get you is history. It's the only thing that's going to give you the, what are you going to do? History. You're going to go out, you're going to look. And it, like I said, don't let it get daunting on you, because even when you have complex hatches, they'll usually, and that's your journal, they will usually isolate on one, just like, I mean, when we were with Stenerson, we had four bugs going, really, mm-hmm. but they isolated on one, and they always do. I mean, there's no such thing as always. They usually do. Mm-hmm. But when it just breaks your learning curve down, because if you say, okay, I know they're going to be on the Pink Alberts at 2 o'clock, right? And maybe you're going to need a rando PMD here and there, but you can go out, and they don't eat your bug. Well, you've just eliminated one quarter of the equation. Right. You know there's only four potential. One's already done because it happened in the morning. The other one's going to be later. So now you're down to two. You only got two colors to play with. If you're stupid, you don't take the pink one that your buddy offers you. If you are stubborn, you will stick with that yellow. But
yeah,
you will break it down. And the next time you go and there's nobody looking, you're going to go right to Pink Albert.
Right.
You know, it's not that hard.
So yeah, I think there's the, I'm going to refer to it as the scientific approach, which is know what bugs are going to be there. Do your research beforehand. Show up with the bugs prepped you think are there. The non-scientific way to do this is grab the bugs out of the air, watch them on the water, like be there and go, okay, yeah, I don't know.
Be able to catch them too. It's not always as easy to catch them.
I think it's easier to get low to the water and watch, or find a feeding fish and try to figure out what it's eating, and then go, okay, well, I don't know what bug that is. Like I did this in Wyoming a few years ago. I had no idea what mayfly was hatching. I was there to fish streamers. Of course, I broke my streamer rod on my first bat cast the night I showed up. That was a bummer. But I'm out. I'm throwing a fly that's far too big for the little spay rod I had, so I was overhanding it and hitting myself on the back of the head constantly. And then I all of a sudden see a couple of big rainbows up in a back eddy, and they're eating spinners. And I'm like looking around. I see a couple bugs flying around, and I know they're mayflies. I can tell that they're mayflies, but I don't know what they are. So I ran back to the truck, grabbed my mayfly box and a dry fly rod, and ran back down there and just started going through. I still don't know if they were EPORs mayflies, but it was your...
How big were they? 16s?
16s, yeah. It was... what's your...
Foundlink,
yeah. Mm-hmm. It was your foundlink, the rusty foundlink, that I ended up catching a couple of these fish on. And so I didn't know what bug was there, but I went, okay, I think this is a mayfly. I'm just going to go through the mayflies that I think are about the right size and color. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of the backwards route to the same thing.
It's really all any of us can do.
Yeah, no, but
you're there. Like, you're there. There's, and you know the answer, and it ain't working.
Right.
All you can do is start change.
But you can either know all the bugs going in, or you can go, you know, use the power of observation and sort of, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Trial and error.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for.
I mean, one thing you can look for on if the bug's big enough is how many tails it's got. That can tell you something. But it's not really. I mean, it's all your mayflies, and you should already know, you know, there's very few times that... It's just going to give you a guideline, you know. And usually when you say, with drakes, they're so big, you know, the green, even lessers, you know, drakes, green drakes, gray drakes, I don't really care. It's so prolific and it's overwhelming generally on that thing. Mm-hmm. So it just really, if you just get a book or a hatch chart, there's a bunch of them out there. There's some small ones that you can carry with you. They've reclassified most of the bugs. I think we're on the third reclassification since I did it. Hmm. And they've assembled some of them. Like that, they used to have like four subcategories. Now they're one bug, right? Which has really made it easier. Because you're out there trying to find this subgroup that it's, what is it? And it's like, man, it still looks like a PMD.
Right.
And you're like, well, that's because it is now, but it wasn't in the old days. And so, but I mean, for the most part, all you can do is go out, look and see it and go, just, you know, make it memory. Just know what it is and go.
Right.
And you won't get, there's not, like I said, there's not that many bugs. When we, it always cracks me up because we get certain types of people that come in. Johnny's a bug freak, right? But Johnny's pure Latin on his bugs, and he's really, really astute. Guys will come in, and there's certain places that they really like to, on the Henry's Fork, they really like to get Latin-y. And guys will come in, and they'll always talk down at the nymph guys first, right? Then they'll say to Johnny, so, and they'll list off some bug. Johnny goes, well, it's actually not the bug, but, and he'll correct them. But you don't need to know the Latin name because nobody else talks Latin anymore. It doesn't matter.
You call fly shop and say the Latin name.
Isonychias and ephrons, I see that. They still use that. Thetis, I guess they use that. So Yeah, but that's the only thing I can do is help you.
So what, you know,
and
he said
you can get the video of Rick, there was a Hatch video that Hughes or Morris or somebody did, Cutter, Ralph Cutter and his wife, they did a spec. Anything those people did are great. I mean, if you can find anything online, like, I know Ralph had a lot of stuff underwater, emergences and stuff like that. So that's three of the guys. The guys out east, they were great. Cucci and Nastasi, there's a bunch of them out there. But anything that Skip Morris or Dave Hughes or Ralph Cutter did, they were all great. What's the other guy's name? Rick Haefeli. Doug Hand. No, a week, 2 weeks ago. I don't know why my brain does this. Remember, I still think the professor of bass, Doug Hanna.
Gotcha.
That was the guy's name. I don't know why that blew up. I think he's a California guy too, though. So, but they're great resources if you haven't got them. If you are a serious trout angler, fly angler, and you don't have those, you're probably too Euro influenced. You should know all those bugs if you're dry fly, because they're not that many. I mean, Braden could memorize it in an hour. I mean, it took me 30 years, but it would be like, it's not that hard. You go by the months and you're there. And it's such a great resource. Another one is Ted Fasigli's books on mayflies. His photos are the most incredible of any I've ever seen. but it really will, if you are a tyer, back to the can you be a great angler without tying video we did. The things in my book, Cripples and Spinners, I will get you a picture. Don't let me forget this.
Okay.
And we'll put it in here. And it's a Ted Fasiglia picture. And it completely changed everything I did about my emerging flies. Because the bug's coming up, and it's a PM, or it's a sulfur, and it comes up, and he's got his claspers out. He meant they have them. He's like this, and his wing is sitting parallel right on the water surface. Well, it's at the same time that the clink hammer came out, and it shows a post wing sticking straight up, right? And I thought, well, that's completely backwards. It's not really. It's 45 degrees up. And it was such a light bulb moment for me, and I started making all my mayflies with their wings sitting on the water, my emergers.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit. It was just like revolution. And it was a stupid picture, right?
Right.
Spectacular picture.
Yeah.
Not a stupid picture. So everything Ted Fasiglia does is great. And so I would really encourage you to at least get one or two of those books. And there's a lot of crossover, because I said that we've combined a lot of those, so it's not so much Eastern, Western anymore. They're all kind of the same bugs. I just happened to be thinking of Western because I was looking at it the other day. It's, man, you can go down a rat hole. You know how I say I can go down a Davy McPhil rat hole tying? You get in them bug books, man, you can wake up 3 hours later going, whoa, where'd that life go?
Because really
it gives
funny.
You another way to think also, but excuse me, it also gives you how you should be fishing, because if there's an emergence, that's what one of my problems with Euro specific, not Euro fishing, is just that I would love people to do, to run their zones, because that's how I grew up fishing. And I think it's really imperative. The Euro thing's kind of, because you're doubling up, and if places you can do threes, you could do it then. But you can run every strata of the water where the fish could be condensing to follow the hatch, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you see an emergent mayfly and you see what it looks like when it's trying to break through the meniscus, it's stuck underneath there, and you see it, how it's swimming with its feet up and everything's doing, and you see that ectoskeleton, some of them get a little gaseous bubble in their mayfly shuck, in their wing case. Hence, all of a sudden, somebody puts a flashback on a pheasant tail and the world changes, because it's mimicking what the bug does. So you become a better tire, you become a better angler, you become a better everything relating to fishing just by possibly, and for me, it was two or three pictures that just said, I wonder why it's doing that. And it's like, well, it's because of a different, it's not on the bottom of the river anymore. It has to get to the surface. It has to have a mechanism to get to the surface. Everybody knows caddis pupate and they get an ectoskeleton, their ectoskeleton gets a gaseous bubble. They're still swimming, right? They're still right. Actively getting to the top. Well, when I didn't know until probably into the 80s is that the mayflies could also develop that. Imagine if you'd have been the first one that saw that bubble, you would have put that. Can you imagine the royalty on a pheasant tail with a bubble back on it, the shell back? Holy shit.
Couple
I'd
bucks.
Love to have that.
Yeah.
But on top, more important than that is the number of fish it caught. Mm. The number of fish, if you, I never had a pheasant tail work that, a flashback pheasant tail work that great low. But if I brought that up in my second fly, holy shit.
So you're talking about fishing it higher in the call.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if they're on the bottom, it's nature. Nature's defense for those bugs is that they blend to the bottom perfectly, mm-hmm. right? They start emerging, they become, there's things swimming through the water. There's things want to eat you.
Yep.
Now put a little shiny bubble on your back and you just became a beacon, right? But we didn't do that. The closest thing we did to that was, in reality, was a peacock girl. Mm-hmm. Dave Whitlock's and trout. That's why I say it's the, he was so far ahead of his time. They're the most perfectly tied flies in history,
of course,
too. But
actually.
Anything he did. But it is just such a code cracker, which you may or may not be able to get off your damn cell phone. I don't know. I'm sure there's 10 billion things out there. But sit down and touch the page. It'll make yeah. you a better angler.
Well, you can do research beforehand that'll lead you. Like, I think about this moment. I was fishing the Yakima, ran into two dudes when I was on my way out and they were on their way in. And they were talking about seeing a couple bugs running around. And I went, oh my gosh, yeah, did you guys see all of the stoneflies on that tributary on the way down here? And they go, oh, well, we didn't see any. We saw a bunch of caddis. I'm like, huh, all right. And I kind of filed it away. As like they looked at me like I was an idiot.
You didn't see any caddis likely.
I saw tons of caddis. Yeah. I thought they were stoneflies. Because at the time, I didn't...
thought you were smarter than they were.
No,
see,
God,
I
no.
See what
I appreciate that.
But,
yeah, no, I'm not smarter than anybody. I was very new to fly fishing, but had... I didn't understand...
Depending on the stonefly, it could be... I mean, yellow Sally's...
But it's even more elemental than that. I was just starting to like learn... that there are different bugs, mm-hmm. right? That there's more than two dry flies out there, and there's nymphs and all this stuff, right? It's very, very early in my journey, but I remember this because of the personal embarrassment tied to it. But I saw a caddis shuck that is made up of sticks and pebbles,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, stone fly. Ah, that's why they call them a stone fly, because they build their shucks, or what'd you say they were? Is shuck the right term?
Yeah.
Yeah, they
no.
build... No, what is
case.
It? Case. They build their case with stones. And I was like...
One
oh.
does.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay, that's a stonefly. Got it. Yeah. And then I said that to these dudes, and I was totally wrong.
There's freeform and there's...
See, look, I still don't know my bugs very well.
Caddis, you know, thank God for Gary LaFontaine bringing cat. I'll tell you how... This is so new. The world is so new. I grew up in Michigan, as you all know. The number one, until the mid-70s, people fished the hex hatch, mm-hmm. right? Which is the biggest mayfly in the world. There's recurvatas and hex and lumbatas. And we have, because of the lake, there's so many lakes and the Great Lakes, and there are a lot of mud and sand, which they live in. So it's like really prolific, you know. And over into Huron and Erie too, the same thing. Billions of them. So it's the biggest mayfly in the world. I would say... When I opened my first shop in 79 out of my house, there were two fly shops, I think, in the whole state, right? Mm-hmm. And one was part-time and seasonal. And then there was another guy, Neville Geek, had a big sports shop. He had fly fishing in it. But I would say 75% of fly anglers in a state that is hallowed for being one of the pioneers of fly fishing. I mean, Pennsylvania, New York, Michigan, 75% of the anglers fish the hex hatch only. But they called it the freaking caddis hatch. It's like saying, I got a pasture full of Holsteins out there, and every one of them's a donkey. It's a wrong freaking thing. It's still called the caddis hatch. So we're pretty new in this shit, right? And so, and caddis, they call them millers. They still call it the gray miller up on the Yellowstone, or on the fire hole. It's not like this is really old. It is old knowledge, but there's a lot of nomenclature that's just like they called stoneflies helgramites. They still call on this river, old people, like guys in the 80s, 90s, still will say the helgramites. And they mean the salmon fly, the pteranarsis. Right. So there's a lot of that crap out there that can get you, just like with the caddis.
Right.
And when you read, and Western hatches and hatches both will show you the nymphal and everything. So a tent caddis versus a free form versus a case. There's several different casing styles. I mean, there's a lot of it. So get the books. They're great.
Get the books.
Get the books. You'll love them.
Get the books. Get journals.
Get the books. Get the journals. We were talking journals. Was it last week?
It's 2 weeks ago.
And I cannot find, I said I was going to bring it over. I found Billy's. And this is my buddy, Billy Robinson. And Billy is incredible. I don't have the pages. He made all these things for me, right? And it's really cool. It's got a little fish on the front. He's an incredible artist. Guy's a total badass. You wouldn't guess him to be an artist. But he built this for me, made the little pages. And I took the pages out.
You need a shot of that.
It was just really cool. And so, I was thinking about it when I was cleaning up, looking for those journals to bring them over because of the guy Fishy Tales, which I looked up. It's pretty cool.
Stockton.
Stockton?
Stockton was his name. Yep.
Stockton's, I looked up his thing. It was really cool. Everything pertinent to, your brother would love it. His brother thinks you should use digital because you can get so much more. But he's an engineer.
Sorry, Ethan.
Ethan. You didn't have to say his name.
Air our dirty laundry to Kelly. My brother and I had a very,
heated,
informative conversation over text this morning. So he told me he was pulling his hair out when Kelly and I were talking about soulful journal entries.
Yes.
And he's an engineer.
He's an engineer. That just qualifies.
His engineer is like the most effective and most data you can get to solve the problem. And I'm over here. This is why he's an engineer and I am talking about fishing is because I like the whimsical nature of journaling next to the river. I don't do it, but I like the idea.
And I told you on the journal thing, I don't necessarily, I cut my little thing, my little spiral thing in my vest pocket. I still do actually. And sometimes I'll just, a curiosity will come up and I'll write it down. Like, there's two different broods of Epioris. And I was curious on hatch times because I know they did different times or something. And I wrote down, I knew the answer, but I want to go back and look this up, right? But the thing about, I was thinking of the soul part of it and the memory. And Billy, Billy saw me. I said something about this before. He couldn't believe it. You still got that piece of shit? This piece of shit, dude. I'll probably get fucking buried with that thing. I says, there's certain things, and you'll never, that phone of yours, you don't have any emotional contact to that piece of shit.
Yeah, there's no sentimental value when you get a new one.
Yeah, you throw that son of a bitch out like it was an old girlfriend. Boom, out the door, right? You don't give a shit. That thing, I swear, I'll probably bury myself with this thing. And I've got other things like that that just mean a lot to me. And I realize, especially as you get older, like me trying to remember somebody's name, it's like, Doug Hanna, 4 weeks ago we were talking about it. Pops up in pure clarity when it happens. But memories just get stored in the back, right? They're there, they're fresh, they're good. It's like, girlfriends, here they are back here. And then they're at the back of the thing.
Right.
Every once in a while you need something that pops your brain up, right? And says, oh, yeah, Yeah, I remember that. These things are so, you can sit down and you can turn the page. You know what you're not going to do? You're not going to sit with your little freaking tablet going like this and say, oh, look, chicky with the big thing, and I'm over here. This one's getting less. Braden got in your journal and drew a little stick picture in there. You're not going to see it. You're going to have a full, total recall of that evening.
Right.
Which you won't be able to do. And when you look at it, that's why I don't use cell phone pictures. I do not get it. I'm not going to go back and get a freaking camera, right? And say, that would be cool. But, and then I'll put it in my journal, right? But it's, you remember really key things about the night that you don't have to write down. Mm-hmm. That afternoon, you know, whatever. Whatever it is that really was important that you went home and you journaled it and you're there. And what you'll be able to do is go back, which I just can't see. I use my phone. I put a lot of notes in my phone, mm-hmm. right? But I got to go, I got to remember. When I go to my journals, I can just kind of flip through, like my day planners. I've always had day planners. And so, well, not always. My second partner in business, Danny Millward, was he told me that you really need a day planner. He says, I've never seen so many post-it notes in my life. It's like, they're all over the place. And so...
Now, you've had a day planner for how long now? You are religious with it.
30s, yeah.
Except for it's really funny when you're driving around and you come up to the shop, you go, anybody see my day planner I left on the back of my truck? I don't know where it is.
I only did that once.
I had $6,000 in cash in it.
I only did it once. Did I find that one?
I don't think so.
I might have. yeah, but I do that with the day planners, right? And it's always, and I go back and I see them at the end of the year. Sometimes, you know, did you finish, you know, whatever. You know, you had a project you're going. If everything's your cell phone, what do you do when you lose a son of a bitch, you know?
Well, that's
and
why.
And that's why I journal it after my...
I don't mean to turn this into an Apple commercial, but that's why I store my information in the cloud.
You know, I was doing a seminar in somewhere in the Poconos, and it was Lefty and I, and or no, I was at the, not in the Poconos, we were at the L.L. Bean show. Lefty was, it was the last three shows, I think, was just him and I for the most part. And I'm sitting there messing with my computer and something, and he goes, you still using that? He says, hell, you still got, what was pre-cloud? What was the storage mechanism? Name of it. It was a name. I can't remember what he said.
Hard drive?
Whatever. Yeah, I guess just the hard drive. Whatever.
Yeah.
He goes, you still storing that in the hard? Hell, I've been on the cloud for 3 years. He was 86 years old. I was like, shit. But he's also, you know, rocket scientist.
Yeah. So,
but it was like, hell, boy, I've been on that for 3 years. And I said, okay, I figured it out. But the point is, the journals will give you the books. You can cross, you know, look at the data from the books. You get it when you see it. You journal it. It's just really, I dig it.
Yeah, so did you see any of these? I'll throw photos in, but we got some emails. This guy started keeping journals when he was 13 years old.
Badass. That's that one on 1972. The right looks like mine.
Yeah. That looks cool, like... scribbles and stuff. And let's see, there might have been more to that. But yeah, and then he started,
post one of those.
Yeah, he started doing night logs on fishing. So this guy's,
sorry, I've been busy bulldozing this week. Wrecking things.
All these logs he's got. So that's super cool. That's Rick Bobrick. I'll throw those photos in. And then, let's see. There's one other comment here. Rory sent in some photos of his journals. A couple folks sent them to be on Instagram. And then a guy named Reagan emailed back about the Fishy Tales app that Stockton made. Fellas, checked out that app. I'm surf fishing, so some slightly different requirements, but a journal is critical to learning your spots. Please pass these comments on to the developer. He said the location feature is buggy, but he said he wants tide info, wind info, swell and wave
info. I swear I saw tide and I don't know about wave.
It might have been, but then barometric pressure over time.
That was on there.
So he recommended an integration with the Windy app, which the Windy app's a great app.
Yep.
So what a lot of like the, when we were up in Alaska, our bush pilots were using the Windy app, which was, I guess, an endorsement of how good it is that they're
You're
using
alive.
It. Yeah. Yeah, barely. The one guy.
They have one of the highest death rates.
Oh my God. I can't believe, I don't know if I've told the story on here, but we take off from Kodiak. Did I tell this the other day?
Me. I don't know.
I might have said this the other day on here. I can't remember. I was telling somebody, but basically we took off from Kodiak and we're like flying away from Kodiak and this guy's just texting on his phone. And we're heading right at a mountain. And I'm sitting in the way back of the plane and I'm like, is anybody?
Gets really close.
We're starting getting close and he looks up and he goes, holy shit. And turns and goes, was anybody going to tell me? I'm like, dude, you're the pilot.
I had a BC pilot once. We're going to Bella Coola and you do 2 or 3 mail drops. And it's just me. There's a gal on there. Very attractive gal too. I was hitting on her, but she wouldn't take the next flight to go to Bella Coola with me to go into the dean with me. But just kidding, in case there was an ex-wife at that time. But we're coming into land, and there's before cell phones, right?
Yeah.
Any of that stuff. And it's just, and he's well, I don't know, I might have to make another run through this. I can't, it's thick, man. I can't see a thing. I don't know what to do. He says, I don't know how high, whatever. He goes, oh, I don't know. I can't see a thing. I'm telling you, I can't see a thing. He goes, ah, like that. Yeah. And it's always cloudy.
Joke. Yeah.
Yeah. And he jumps back and he looks at me like this. You break through that ceiling and it's always, you know, 200 feet up or whatever right. It is. And you're totally clear. and the girl looks at me and goes, he loves to do that. I go, oh, that was great. I could see we had 200 feet. You're going to die no matter what. So yep. It would be. But whatever. It was, she goes, can you imagine doing that in the States? Oh, Jesus.
Well, what I thought
you
was.
You know, in that airline.
I remember when we took that little charter plane from Puerto Montt down to Chaitén, down in Chile. Mm-hmm. And right as we're like coming into land, you know, Brian O'Keefe, one of the greatest fishing photographers ever lived.
Phone.
He's got his phone in the middle filming, you know, as we're going to land. And right as we touch down, he just shakes his phone a bunch so it looks like we crashed in the video. Next time we did that, I took that one and sent it to my family. But they know I'm so full of shit, especially sending a video afterwards. But funny stuff.
You lived.
I lived. So long way around the barn, learn your bugs.
Learn your bugs, but then we came back to
journaling.
Journals.
Yeah, journaling. And, the other one I wanted to share is after I caught those, you know, 3 steelhead in an hour this last fall, I drove up to the next run and was like, I really wished I had a journal on me, right? To just kind of, the joy after 12 days of dawn to dusk, you know,
Biteless.
Putting your time in, and I'm sure other people have gone longer, but I was really overjoyed to get those fish, and I was trying to bottle that warm feeling I had of.
I don't think anybody can really appreciate it until you have one. Like the guy who's been doing them since 72, that's about when I started mine, the ones I lost them all.
Yeah.
11 or 12 years were.
Sit
and read them.
Oh, yeah. I wish I had one because as soon as I got up to this next round, I took out my phone and tried to do like a voice memo. This is the most incoherent babbling. I mean, it's not surprising coming from me, but I just pretty much immediately deleted it. And it's like, hey, that's not.
I suppose if you're like your brother who's done that voice thing forever, whatever he called it.
I mean, he's really well practicing that. He's also a very eloquent speaker. And
yeah, that helps. I mean, I bumble and mumble and, you know.
Oh, really?
I go through those. I listen to those things I put on my phone and I'm like, what? What was that?
It sounded like the incoherent ramblings of a madman.
Yeah.
Which is
just like
that. Maybe that's what we should have called this podcast.
Yeah, it kind of is. Get a journal. Buy the books.
Yeah.
Be happy.
Staples. Went into Staples the other day. Had a lot of great options for journals.
Oh, yeah. Tons.
Yeah.
There's so many. I mean, I cannot find my leather-bound one that I never used. That Tom gave it to me. I used it for one season. I had a page, but it was all steelhead, and I have no idea what I did. I know it's over there, because I had it before that's the only bounce I had a journal. Ex-wife's will eat them up.
Right. and that's a point for Ethan there is cloud storage.
Yes.
Yeah, you can get a new phone, know where it is.
Blah, blah.
Yep.
Get a journal.
But
I still have all my little spiral notebooks.
Yeah. That's what I think I'm going to get to. I've been thinking about this, and I'm to do my best to actually make it happen this summer, which is not on nobody but me, but to actually have a little spiral notebook with me. And if I get something I think is meaningful, then, you know, draw a little sketch of the fish or the hole I got it or the fly I was with, and just record what I think the interesting parts of it were.
The other thing about that on your hatches on the journal, because that's where mine started. When I first started doing, I started them for journaling steelhead, when they show, where they showed, stuff
it's
like
it's
that.
It's a database.
Yeah. Yeah. But as I developed into the hatch thing, it became absolutely so much better than any of the books that I had, because they were very general. Mm-hmm. And my hatch data, I mean, that's how I figured. I never got a trout to eat a Hendrickson in less than 55 degree water, right? Mm-hmm. It took me 2 years of journaling to put it together, because you're just kind of like water temp, 53, whatever. And, you know, Hendrickson's here, you know, sparse, oh, really big, no heads up, caught some on nymphs, blah, blah, blah. And then I started realizing every time I hit a double nickel, I had fish up.
Double nickel, 55.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time.
I remember the first time I heard you say that, we were filming, and you took a temperature reading of the water, and then about a minute later, you make a cast, and you go, double nickel, bitch, everybody's going to eat dries.
Exactly.
Yeah, that cracked me up. I was like, what are you going on about?
I didn't have any data in the old days to tell me that temperature zones that the bugs hatched in, or were more active or anything like that, right? I mean, I'm sure there was something in there generic, but you got it down to certain rivers. Some rivers they'd eat in colder water, some way they wouldn't. And that's where, you know, when you get a generic one off of a website, or if you get it off, call the shop and say they're hatching, and you're just worrying about a hatch. When you know, when you do your own work, you'll put it together quicker.
Mm-hmm. Got anything you're pissed off about this week? Yeah. We haven't done that in a while. What are you pissed off about?
That prick that runs up and down this road I can't bring his name. Oh, man, I'm about ready to shove this guy off the freaking
road. I'll bleep it out.
He'll pass you.
What's his name?
Then he'll lock on the, I don't know.
He's just got. What's his car? I'll block it out.
No.
I'll bleep it out.
He's old. But he'll pass, and then he'll slow down, and then he'll do it. And it's just one of these things. It pisses me off when people, like, somebody passes me, you freaking earned it.
Yeah.
I mean, you earned
yes,
it.
That
and
is
I'm
true.
Like, right on. I'll race when we get up to the corners. And so, but they, when you pass somebody and they speed up, I mean, I just feel like I should be able to pull over and jack you.
Yeah.
Or at least give you a drive-by and shoot your tire out. I don't really care. It's just like, what the hell? Your head's up your ass. Somebody passes you and you're like, oh, I had a guy flip me off. Pass him. He's going from, he had to be hammered. He's coming out of Bozeman. He's doing a white pickup. 60, 62, 63, 74. 74, okay, good. We're getting up to where we all been.
Yeah.
Down to 62. Finally, about the third time, I pass that guy, and he's flipping me off. And it's like,
All right, look in the mirror.
Hit the brakes. Let's get, and then he pulls off.
Yeah.
Pulls into his driveway. He's probably hammered, but that really pisses me off. Why would it piss you off? Somebody passed you. You're the one that says this is how fast the world goes. Right?
Yeah.
This is your...
Well, there's two... I remember seeing this meme about this. So I have two emotions when I'm driving. If somebody passes me, it's, whoa, slow down there, buddy. And if somebody's in front of me, it's, move the fuck on, I will kill you. And there's one speed that's right, and it's the speed I'm going.
Yeah. And I don't get passed very often. So no, why do you care? I'm just going to plow the elk out of the way for you. So you should be happy that I'm way out in front of you, clearing the path.
I always like playing a game when Kelly and I both leave the slide, I'll take off like a couple minutes before him and just see how far I can make it.
20 minutes.
Yeah, before I see that big black truck come flying past me.
Yes.
What was the other thing I was going to say? Oh, yeah. I'm trying to start a movement. I started doing this a few years ago. Specifically when I started seeing Cybertrucks. I hate to say.
What's a Cybertruck?
This is Elon Musk's Tesla.
Oh, those things?
Yeah, that boxy metallic.
Yeah.
I think they're the dumbest fucking car in the world. Whenever I saw those, I don't flip them off. I just give them a thumbs up or sometimes a thumbs down. And I think those are way funnier than flipping people off. Like specifically, I do the thumbs down mostly to the Cybertruck so they don't get it confused. But like if somebody drives like a complete moron and they know that they drove like an idiot and you pull up next to them at a stoplight, just look over and smile and give them a thumbs up. It's just, it's so demeaning to them, but it makes me laugh and I'm not flipping them off, so I'm not technically being an asshole.
You know, I don't know. Things have changed evidently. When I was growing up, you flip somebody off, your car might get stopped. The next stoplight, you better have a good response.
Yeah, that's why you give them a thumbs up.
Yeah.
It's
that's fine.
Yeah.
That flipping you off because you got passed.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Our neighbors did, one of my neighbors did that to me. Mm. He knew it was me coming by. And he flipped me off. And the next day he called me and really? Apologized. That's not like me. I says, Abe, I thought it was the funniest thing you ever did in your life.
It's not hilarious. Like, if you're not you when you're alone in your car, who are you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's pissing me off. That's it. Only because it happened yesterday.
All right. To round this one out, I got a question.
Close up.
What?
No. it's my first new bug of the year.
Oh, let me see this.
That's not really. You've seen it. It's when I fished with Howard. Oh. But it's for the lake.
Gotcha.
This one is.
First.
To Calabatus.
Wait a minute, I forgot the question I was going to ask you. I don't know. Mm. All right. This comes from David Jones.
Yeah, Green the Monkeys? Oh, oh, oh.
He's going to be the man.
Davey.
Davey
Jones. Yeah, he's a little singer guy.
Oh. I was just
thinking. Yeah, he's also
of the locker.
I was going to say.
The locker.
Being a locker in the sea, too.
The deep sea lockerman. David Jones, he says on YouTube, question for the commenters and, of course, everyone at the slide. The most recent trip, a rainbow burst his head through the surface and proceeded to speedboat with only his head out of the water for at least 25 feet. I've never seen this before, and I'm clueless as to the reason. Can't imagine he was chasing an emerger, and there were no insects skating across the surface. Any ideas? Obviously, kind of a hard question, given that we weren't there to witness it, but what might drive a fish to behave like that?
Well, it would be very few things that could outswim a fish, including a dragonfly or damselflies,
right.
Which dragons are the fastest, but nothing in the river. I've seen fish that are hooked and dragging line that have done, I've seen steelhead shoot, I don't know, about 25 feet. 6, 7, 8 feet, maybe. Seen them with their shaking their heads as they're above water.
I'm trying to throw something.
Maybe. I don't know. But I have no parasite. I don't know. That's not a. The only time I've ever seen it happen has been steelhead that I can recall. I've seen them go kind of like multiple fast hits, in particular on lakes. I've seen them do it for damselflies and. Mm-hmm. Dragonflies.
You're like chasing bait?
It's possible, but usually it's a but his head's consistently out.
It's not a smooth.
Yeah, I don't, no idea on that one.
You reminded me of a story I heard Tracy Allen tell on the River Rambler podcast, which that's a great episode. Go listen to that. Tracy Allen is obviously the man. But he told a story about, I think it was the hottest steelhead he ever caught. It's like a 34-inch female, wild female. And I think he said they fought the thing for over an hour. And they're like running up and down the bank trying to land this thing. And they finally do. And they held it for maybe a second. And the thing just rockets off and cartwheels upstream out of sight, like two runs up. And then Tracy, you know, turned to his friend or one of the guys said something like, well, I think we want more of that one. But have you ever seen that before? Because I never heard of, like,
I've seen letting them go. They go.
And then they just cartwheel out of there like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you ever have that while you were steelhead guiding or fishing for them?
Yeah. Let go is where they jump right in front of you.
Yeah. Like, just immediately.
What was that about? Yeah. I never had one run that far up. And I've seen them, you never know if it's the same fish, but I've seen them cartwheel.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the same fish, but lots of them when you let them go. Out of the net. I had one in the net one time do it. Almost went in our boat, landed, hit the gunwale. We were right beside the boat with the net down like that, and releasing it. We were just sitting there, just kind of all everything else. And wow, just doesn't air launch, scared the shit out of me.
Huh.
And crashed into the boat and didn't go in the boat, but he hit it.
All right,
I also had a guy in the one fly who I've told the story before where he hooked up, he was on a JJ, just below Palisades Dam, and he hooked the fish, and it ran straight. I've never seen this one. Ran straight at us, and he was kind of porpoising every now and then.
Like skipping almost?
Almost, yeah. And I mean, talking about a long ways out, too, like 40 feet. And he comes at us wide open. I've never seen a fish run. He's almost like he's tracking the guy's fly line. And he jumps right there and headers the boat and pops that fly. Head it dead on. But you see, it's JJ sticking straight up. Had a perfect hook on him, right on the end of his beak. And the thing popped straight up in the air. He lost it. Hmm. And he cried.
Oh.
I said, well, we none of that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. There's no crying on the river.
He got weepy. Put that way.
Happy tears are okay. Happy tears are okay on the river.
It was the biggest, and it's one of the biggest browns I've ever seen on there. It was over 30 brown.
All right.
Big hand. Long, skinny. About, I don't know, 30 plus.
I might have cried.
And it was
Let me rephrase.
Likely his first five casts of the one fly.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty
That
would
have been a big winner, huh? Yeah, whenever I floated that section, we always bang fish.
We weren't 100 feet from the dam.
We always bang fish up high, and then I don't know if I've ever caught a fish from between there and spring. That's not true. I have, but it's always hot right off the bat.
There are plenty of guides that circulate that and do that circle jerk thing.
Yeah.
They never leave that dam, and they catch a shit ton of fish.
Or we did that one morning. It was a couple of years ago. We went down there and camped, and we wanted to be in the water. It was like late spring, early summer. It was going to get up to 85 that day. And, you know, we woke up real early, got down to the boat ramp at Palisades at dawn. It's like 32 degrees and blowing sideways, and none of us have more than like a windbreaker. This has an additional layer. So we went back and sat in the cars for an hour and a half until the sun was on the water. Go out. My buddy Jack got a big Mackinac right below the dam, and then we hammered a couple other fish right there, and then it just died on us. Well, that's what we get for being pussies and sitting in the truck for the... I'm sure that bite was on. Maybe it wasn't, but it's easy to think that bite was definitely on while we were sitting there being cold. But that's the way she goes.
Six P's, you know.
Yep. All right. We haven't done Band of the Week in a while, and Bob Weir just died. So this is going to be a week removed now, but I don't think I've ever picked the Grateful Dead as my band.
God, that's all you guys ever pick.
No, I do a lot of Jerry Garcia and his spinoffs, but shout out to Mr. Bob Weir. Brought a lot of joy to a lot of people, not Kelly, but a lot of other people over the years. So that is my...
I don't know, he might have. There's only times I don't like the Dead. Like I said, maybe when it was him and...
I think you don't like the drums, bass, lost in the figment of my imagination Dead.
Yeah. I was listening to an interview with him. And he was saying about how aliens from space and energy from space comes down and goes into my guitar, and that's what makes me play.
I just
speak through the energy that's coming out of the, which, you know, I'm not all against energy. And Indians believed in it. And I believe in telepathic communication. So maybe Bob had an inside line to somebody.
Or he did enough acid to believe he did.
It doesn't really matter.
But
very successful, and you all loved it.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm sure
at the end of the day, I love the music.
I watched a couple of his interviews after he died, and it was, you know, cool cat.
Yeah. I met his daughter down at, what's that school called, in Orange County? My buddy went there. I went to visit him. It's not Colgate. It starts with a C, though. I met Bob Weir's daughter down there.
Yeah, cool.
Not a bad-looking woman.
Yeah, she's in the interview, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's in there, too. Well, I'm one of them. So, that I saw.
Well, if she's watching, she's single.
Band of the Week. I'm sure she's right on.
I'm sure she's watching.
Up, dialing up right
she's sitting
now.
There going, who the fuck is this guy?
Yes. So... And then thinking about making you stop dropping F-bombs just because it's so prevalent in Congress now with all you libs out there dropping that constantly.
It's just us.
It's just losing. I've never heard
of it.
It's losing its thump. You know, I'm waiting for Maxine Waters.
Becoming a colloquialism?
Maybe. I had a band for you, too, that I had forgot.
You can say Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I already did them. Remember, I heard that song and I really liked
it. We did Chili Peppers already?
Yeah, I did that one. Jackson Browne, they do him?
No, that's a good one, though.
Jackson Browne. Yeah. Since I got my Spotify, I get to, after listening to your thing, Mel got me Spotify. And there's the 1,500 best classic rock songs. And you get, you know, it goes all the way back to the 60s.
I bet there's some really bad songs on there.
Yeah, but you can just
I bet there's great, a bunch great, too, yeah.
But yeah, it's been a, you know, a lot of times I don't listen to anything.
Right.
You know, just to the energy.
Just to the energy. You're going to get zapped up.
Yeah.
When the alien rapture is upon us, you're going to be beamed up and I'm going to be left here. Yes. Well, for everyone else left over, we will have a podcast next Tuesday.
Bucky.
Yeah, look forward to Bucky. Bucky's going to be here in about a half hour, so I don't want to pull the veil back or speak through the fourth wall.
Shirts.
Yeah, but we're filming two in a day again, back on our kind of winter schedule.
Very cool, though, that we're going to have Bucky on.
Yep, so look forward to that. It's going to be great, and we're going to try to not talk about spey fishing too much.
Yes, we are. We didn't this time, did we?
No, I don't think we even mentioned it until now.
Ah, it's got that back stinger hook in the tongue.
Shit, did that hurt.
Oh. Yeah, that felt great.
Well, that's a great way to
There you go. Don't lick the chalkboard.
See you next week.
See you next week or in an hour.